are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
And don't you know that's true?
Don't you know it's
yes.
true? Girl, you know it's. Girl, you know it's. Girl, you know it's.
What is that?
You don't know that?
I don't know that.
That's when Milli Vanilli was revealed as doing their lip syncing.
Oh.
That's what was playing that kept skipping.
Oh,
so they were on stage during the MTV something, and it was like, girl, you know it's, girl, you know it's, girl, you know it's, which is the extent of the Milli Vanilli lyrics that I know. Yes.
That was before my time.
Oh, look, something in my eye. Oh, there we go. Okay. How are you?
I am good, Paul.
Good.
How are you?
I am good.
It
I am good.
It's May 16th.
Yes. Very excited about being here. We have David. And well, we have Davis and possibly David.
We're waiting
on a Burnham.
Waiting on a Burnham who may have gotten some traffic.
And you've really thrown me here. We got Davis and David, and we got two tracks to play. I Ever Leave You and If I Loved You. So If I Ever Love You, Davis and David. There's going to be a lot of tongue twisters, I'm telling you right now.
And yes, so just put your thumb in your mouth right now, and you'll be happy, but first.
Going to forego the obvious joke there, but go ahead, Michael.
I think we should thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And, Paul, it's another Hour of Power today on State of the Arts, this time
hour
with two...
Power.
Did you like that one?
Yes, I did.
Did you?
Hour of Power. Jeez, that's...
Wow. This time with two of Broadway's most distinguished stars who are with us, not only to talk about their illustrious careers, but a joint venture in which they are appearing for Musical Theater West in Long Beach, California, this coming Monday, May 20th. And that is a concert version of Jerry Herman's spectacular 1974 musical, Mac and Mabel.
And as Michael said, two of the show's stars are with us today, one right now and hopefully another later. But first, the one who is here in the title role of Mac Sennett, please say hello to an old friend of State of the Arts. He's been with us a couple of times. We always love having him here.
Not that old.
Dave. the perennially youthful Davis Gaines.
Thank you so much.
And I just want to say, Davis, and you know, we had this conversation in the lobby, and I don't know if Michael remembers it, but I just want to tell him I'm very excited that Davis is here today. It's a good day for him to be here because today we're having tacos.
Oh,
do you remember the story he told?
If Dave doesn't show up, we may have you retell. Well, yeah, you've got another 20 minutes to fill, pal.
Bada boom, bada bing.
Exactly. Well, you know, and Paul, I just want to say that Davis and David will be, with Davis, we know that he is the star of the show, and then David Burnham, who is the special guest star, will be portraying the role of Frank Wyman.
Okay, now I know Mac Sennett, and I know Mabel Normand.
Frank Capra is who that really was.
Yeah. I was going to ask.
Yeah, it's in the script.
Yes. Is it? Because I've seen him as Frank Wyman and then as Frank Capra.
He becomes Frank Capra. I mean, that's who this little... He met him when he was a 16-year-old newspaper boy.
Right. Okay. Did Frank Capra actually change his name, or is it just a...
No, I think he was always Frank Capra.
Oh, okay. So it's just...
When I did the research on it, it came up as...
And they changed the lawyers' names, too, in the original, but they put them back to the real people.
Oh, okay.
Which is nice. And Fatty Arbuckle and...
Yeah. So we stand corrected. I stand corrected.
No, I was just curious if it was something that Capra changed it... You know, if it was an issue of it being for the play or if it's something that he did personally.
Well, I think the character is an actor who turns a director, isn't that correct?
Right.
Yeah.
No, because they're using Mabel Normand's name, Mac Sennett's name, but all of a sudden it's Frank Wyman, so maybe they didn't get approval from the estate or something.
It's Frank.
I don't know. don't know.
Well, you know, and I must say also, Paul, that Davis and David will be joined in Mac and Mabel by the fabulous one and only Miss Vicki Lewis as
Vicki
Mabel.
Lewis.
Norman.
It's going to be great.
And as if that's not enough, under the direction of an award-winning creative team headed by Emmy Award-winning director Larry Carpenter and Emmy Award-winning and Grammy Award-winning musical director John McDaniel, who Davis just worked with recently when he did the beautiful... David Galligan stage benefit here
Sean
at the Savannah Theater.
Both of them.
John is amazing.
I've worked with both of them before.
Yes.
Larry Carpenter, who now directs General Hospital.
Here yeah, yes, I know.
And he directed me in Company back in the day in Boston, a great production of Company that Larry directed years ago that I did. And John McDaniel, after my run of Phantom at the Amundsen back in 93, I did a concert at the Universal Amphitheater, and John conducted my concert and arranged my concert. It was fantastic. So we all go way back. So it's
And Vicki and I. It doesn't get any better
Vicki
than
and
that,
I too.
Right?
So yeah,
oh, Vicki.
Vicki and
she
I played.
So
we were in Hello Dolly together. She was Minnie Faye. I was Cornelius with Joanne Worley as Hello
Dolly. Oh my goodness.
Carol Channing. So we have all of them. Very incestuous.
That's hysterical. You're right, Michael. It doesn't get better than that. Ladies, as a reminder, I want to let the listeners know that Musical Theater West's presentation of Mac and Mabel is a special one-night-only event coming up this Monday, May 20th, at the Richard and Karen Carpenter Center in Long Beach in benefit of Musical Theater West's education and outreach programs. And a little later in the program, we'll tell you exactly how to get tickets to the show and support a most worthwhile cause. But first, Michael, how was your week?
You know, Paul, thanks for asking.
Yes.
I actually had a busy week between going to the theater, which I'm going to talk about.
But that's
about
a given
later.
With you. Yeah. You're always busy. You always keep a lot of plates spinning.
And, you know, prepping for the shows coming up at Sterling's. And we've had some amazing, wonderful things happening over there. We did the music of Anthony Newley and Leslie Brickus recently.
Oh, really?
With Critchland Records. Bruce Kimmel brings a monthly show in and always dazzles us with the talent.
Critchland is every month there? I didn't realize it was every
month.
It's
once a month.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, but it's always very thematic, and Bruce does quite a bit of research with these shows. And
I got the e-blast today about the Noel Coward.
That's right. That's our next show in June.
That's a great thing about it, is that even though it's still got the banner of Critchland, it's different every time.
Every time.
Yeah.
Different performers and special guest stars, and actually David Burnham was in the show last this month in May, the Newley show. So, you know, just prepping all of that stuff keeps me hopping through the week, and then I get out and see theater, and as I said, I'll talk about that. And
oh, good. You have you were an active theater goer.
I
think I know what you saw. You saw, well, you tell about it later, but it was a parade down
Fullerton,
right?
That's right.
Yeah.
A marvelous production of it. Yeah. And Paul, what about you?
My week was fine. I posted something on Facebook that I got a tremendous response to, and it must have really struck a nerve with a lot of couples. But it was the other morning, and I was coming out of the shower. And I said to
and
my
that's a visual there.
Wow. Yeah, because
did you post that?
When when you're Italian and you pass 40, it's just sort of different levels of Yeti.
Oh God!
You know, it's just sort of where you are. But no, I asked my wife. I said, you know, pass me the towel.
Yes,
and she gave me the towel, and I said, no, my towel. And she goes, that is your towel. I said, no, I use the one on the lower bar. And she said, what do you mean? I said, since we moved here, I've been using the towel on the lower bar. And she just sort of glazed over, and I said, what's the problem? And she said, we've been using the same towel for 7 years. It's like, oh, okay.
Wow.
And then everyone's like, and then there was like this barrage of Facebook stuff. People were just like, wait a minute. Well, a lot of people just, you know, laughed, but a lot of people were just like, wait a minute, wasn't it damp or something like that? It's like, no, but we showered at completely different times, Monica and I, because I get up at like 4 a.m.
Exactly.
I'm an insomniac. So it's usually dry by the time I use it and then dry by the time she uses it. But, you know, I want to stress, and Monica actually wanted me to stress this, it's not the same towel.
Somebody does laundry.
Let's hope they do. The towel gets swapped out every other day or something like that. But it was just funny that we were using the exact same towel. Well, we really never needed to wash the top one because no one was using it.
That's true.
Unbeknownst to us.
Saved on water and everything.
So yeah, exactly. So that was my quirky week.
I think I chimed in with a comment on when I saw that post.
You did. You said, that's it. I'm throwing in the towel.
That's right.
Yes, exactly.
That's right. That's what I said.
Well, that's what you said that I can say on the air. The other thing was really rather rude, and I don't want to talk about it.
Exactly.
But that's a whole thing.
So another typical week in your life.
That's exactly.
It's exciting.
Did you just get a phone call?
No, I didn't, but I left it on for Mr. Burnham.
Was that what it was? Because it was either that or you had too much gazpacho.
I think the latter. I would go there.
Well, while we wait for Mr. Burnham, while we wait for David, let's chat with David.
Yes,
shall we?
All right. Exactly. Let me give him his introduction.
Oh, you don't have to.
Oh, yes, of course.
Davis, if you're going to hold up the card, we're reading it.
All right.
You know what I'm saying?
Short and sweet.
Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, has the distinction of playing the title role of the Phantom of the Opera over 2,000 times collectively on Broadway. And in the Los Angeles and San Francisco sit-downs of the show, no stranger to musical theater West, by the way, he received L.A. Theater's most coveted award, the L.A. Stage Alliance's Ovation Award for Best Lead Actor in a Musical, that being for Musical Theater West, 2012 production of Man of La Mancha. He then starred in the West Coast Los Angeles premiere of Silence the Musical, based on the motion picture Silence of the Lambs. I will not forget that performance, sir.
Thank you so much.
Only to return to Musical Theater West earlier this year, where audiences and critics alike praised his work as director of Rodgers and Hammerstein's timeless musical, Oklahoma. Please welcome Davis Gaines.
He's so great to be here.
He's
like coming home.
Yeah?
Coming home.
It is sort of effortless having you here.
I love it. I enjoy your time here.
So, you are walking into a rather unusual situation here because this is a very special event on Monday, and it has, we were saying before the show, ladies and gentlemen, only 25 hours of rehearsal.
Correct. So we haven't even started yet. So we start tomorrow at 11 o'clock.
Oh, my gosh.
So we do Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. And it has to be restricted into time-wise, 25 hours spread out through
for
those
actors,
days?
Yes. Actors' equity rule.
So but that's similar to the Musical Theater Guild.
I guess it is.
Yes, the way that they operate.
Yes.
Have you ever been to a musical theater?
No, but why the limitation?
Excuse me.
That particular contract that they decided to use for this?
Oh, okay. So it's not like a competition or anything. It's
not
like
we're trying to show up. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what that was.
No, it's not that. It's just how we have to do it.
Yeah. Right. Oh, okay.
And it must be cost effective to do it this way as well.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Do that. But it's a benefit, and they're maximizing their potential and their gross income for this.
Correct.
It's an annual thing that they do, perhaps more than once. I don't know, but I know it's certainly done annually.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. Oh. So, but this is a challenge because this is such
it's a wonderful score. I mean, one of Jerry Herman's best, I think.
Yeah.
Every song is just so much fun and so beautiful and so, and we have a full orchestra on stage that John's going to conduct, and it's going to sound amazing.
So lush.
And it's very rare that you get to hear this music live because no one does Mac and Mabel very often.
That was my first question because I'm a huge silent movie fan and I know Mack Sennett and I know I'm a Chaplin fan and all that, but I'm not familiar with this one. And why do you think it's not produced frequently?
Well, apparently back in the book was a problem, the script was a problem initially in the 74 version, and they tried to overhaul it.
Yeah.
But and we're doing the script. We're reading it's book in hand, so we're reading the script. But the script is cut down so that the music will be the star, I think. But
are you doing the most revived version of it?
The most revived version of it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Where there is a happy ending at the end.
Yes. That's correct. That's right.
And because Mabel Normand dies of who knows, but she was in drugs and crazy stuff, and so she dies. And in the first version, I think she dies at the end, and so it wasn't a very happy ending. But since then, it was known as the king of comedy and the happy endings. This show ends when she's still there.
Is Chaplin represented in the show?
No, they talk about him a lot.
Oh, okay.
But I've just been fascinated to read Sennett's autobiography again and learn about who he worked with and who he brought up. Chaplin and
Stan
Gloria
Laurel.
Swanson and all these
Stan
people
Laurel.
That worked for him early on and they all left him because they went to better, greener pastures. But he stayed the same.
It was sort of like a Roger Corman. It's like an equivalent of Roger Corman, who made all these like cheap B movies, but all these big stars had got their feet wet with him.
Mm. You know, when the show, the show actually started here in Los Angeles before it went to New York, and when it got to New York, it unfortunately only ran for about 67 performances, as I recall.
Not unlike Parade.
Yes.
Yes, yeah, not unlike Brewery.
Short-lived there. But
with also an equally score on both shows.
Exactly. And yes. I think for Jerry Herman's sake, who wrote the music to Mac and Mabel, it was one of his most personal.
Yes.
He was very personally affected by the failure of the show on Broadway. But, you know, in hindsight, what was happening on Broadway was that the infusion of rock musicals during that time, and it was very risky to take a show like this, a traditional musical, and put it in the midst of all of that.
Sure, yeah.
You know, the general public was switching out
yes.
their psyche
what
on
year
what was
it?
Happening.
74.
So yeah. Hair had just hit a few years earlier.
All of that. So Jesus Christ Superstar was in the you know, earlier mix of that, and yeah, so that's definitely one of the problems.
But it's become a cult favorite for most musical theater people. That just because of the cast recording with Robert Preston and Bernadette Peters, it was everyone knows the songs and knows the music, and not many people know the show.
Yeah, I saw it here when it first opened, and I was just spellbound by it.
Wow.
I love both of them, and they couldn't have done wrong as far as
exactly.
I was concerned.
Exactly.
And it was interesting, the casting of Bernadette Peters. I also read this morning was originally with two other actresses that were not so. I mean, Bernadette was at the beginning of her career too, but Kelly Garrett was one that was cast and then let go, and Marcia Rodd.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
She was the first one.
Who's I don't know Marcia Rodd. Well, Kelly Garrett.
You wouldn't know them because they're not. I mean, they're from an older time in musical theater, and Bernadette was just coming up on her career and her success. So. I think they certainly made the right choice. I can't imagine,
right.
So for that time, it was a perfect role for Bernadette. And Vicky,
I think Vicky's going to be fantastic. Well. I mean, she's funny and she can sing like nobody.
Yeah.
And it's nice. And it's odd and ironic that both Vicky and I, this is a Robert Preston role for me, this summer, Vicky and I are going to be doing I Do down at the Laguna Playhouse with another Robert Preston role for me. So it's two in a row. So it's very interesting.
We talked about that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So Vicky and I are going to be back-to-back lovers, I suppose.
Well,
it's going to be nice.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. Back-to-back.
Nice or front-to-front. I don't know how that works.
Nice problem to have.
Maybe in her world.
Front to front.
Sure. We'll obviously talk about this more, but before we forget, we want to get the information out there on how you can see this sordid thing taking place on stage, or so it sounds. I'm kidding. It's funny.
You know, it's a bittersweet, beautiful, beautiful music. Reminder,
this will be performed one night only. This is Monday, May 20th at 8 p.m., and as Michael said, the event is benefiting Musical Theater West's education and outreach programs. Tickets are on sale now at musical.org. That's musical.org, just that simple. And by phone, you can call 562-856-1999, extension 4. And there's all sorts of things. I'm sure they offer them on the website. There's VIP seating. There's a post-show reception for that. There's primetime seating. There's the reserve seating. There's all these different tiers depending on what you want to spend. But even at the top, it's $60.
I know.
That's half a ticket in New York City.
And there's not a bad seat in that theater,
there's not.
Really.
It's one of the most beautiful 1,100-seat theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just
it's like stadium seating. It's really nice.
Perfect sight
line. And, Michael, if it's at all possible, if you could find a slightly smaller font, that would be great. Because Arial Narrow 6 is not really cutting it. So maybe an Arial Narrow 4... And then you can compress it and then print it on something that's not opaque.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be a little more difficult.
Thank you for those.
And then just tape it to the wall over there.
Okay.
Sweet Christ, am I old or what?
Yes.
How dare you? Uh-huh.
I spend hours writing this show.
I knew you do. And it was nice of you to carve it into this tablet so I could read it. Appreciate
you
that.
You guys have to
my God.
Keep you apart. You stay over there.
That's why they
never need to put
big ass desk.
I never need to put my glasses on during these reads.
Wow.
Even though I've committed all of this to memory.
Yes, of course.
You know, I just
wow.
So Davis, let me ask you something. You are a fan favorite down there in Long Beach. They love you.
Well, I'm grateful for that. It started pretty recently, last year with La Mancha and Spamalot, and then Oklahoma was a great gift. But
But I mean, so and your directing debut down there with Oklahoma.
Yeah, exciting.
How did that compare to being the star of the show and now you're putting the show together?
I really enjoyed the process and working with the actors. That was my favorite thing, is to work the scenes and work the story and make it real. And That was very rewarding. And
because you got some amazing reviews on that show, too.
Yeah, great cast. Uh-huh. I'm really proud of the cast. It
and
was
you
really
know,
not, well
one
done.
Of the young people that he cast in the show, in the role of Laurie in the show.
Maddie Parks.
Maddie Parks, yes, who is the granddaughter of Betty Garrett.
Oh, yes, Betty Garrett.
And Maddie.
Karen Culliver is her mother.
Yes.
And she is 17, and she was
She's the most
brilliant, beautiful Laurie.
Beautiful, very old soul inside
mm-hmm.
of
she
her.
She worked on, we discussed her about another project
we
she
did
was working on. Because I remember the mention of Betty Garrett.
The Kritzker thing.
Yes, she did a Kritzkerland appearance with us at Sterling's upstairs. At the
okay. She's fantastic.
Yeah, she's a lovely girl. She's got
probably
a big
not
career.
Listening right now because she's in high school. She's probably in school right
well,
now.
If she's listening, she's going to get in trouble. She'll get reprimanded. Had you wanted to, like...
I've always liked that. I always had that kind of brain, and I liked to see the full picture. Even when I'm an actor, I see it from a different way, but I asked for the opportunity and they gave it to me. It was really nice.
Did you find that it was a little tough to separate your performance self from your director self, or did you view that as a benefit
I like that because I knew what I would do or what I would want to see.
Right.
So
right.
that was nice.
And Michael, you direct too. Do you find that to be the, I mean, it sounds like an oversimplification, but I directed as well. Is your launching point just this is what I would want to see if I go to the theater, or do you start a little deeper than that? Because I mean, it's just that simple for me.
You know, I mean, it's kind of a combination or a hybrid of both of those things that you just said. For me, I do have a vision of it going into it, and I never want to do it exactly like I've seen it elsewhere.
Mm, never, right. No.
You know, certainly.
Even as an actor, I don't want to do it like someone
exactly.
else.
Exactly. Yeah. And, it's why I also, if it's a title show that became a movie, I encourage my actors not to see the film and to stay away from that if they've never, seen the film, to please not see it. And, there's always ways to bring something unique and different and fresh, such as you did with your production of Oklahoma. You know, you went out of the box.
I tried, as much as you can do in Long Beach and, you know, in a place where they're very... conservative audiences,
right.
And
how
they
so?
Expect they
how,
expect
how so was the out of the box
they
I didn't
expect
see it.
Traditional things there
right.
I think
well, casting I choices you
casting choices of 17-year-old girl I had a black Aunt Eller
okay.
Sandra McLean hysterically funny and a different Ado Annie than most people would probably choose and but I had age appropriate people all in their 20s, the people that were in their 20s, and and each of the actors had the essence of each of those characters in real life. So that's why I looked for when they came for the audition. They were Curly. That was Will Parker. That they had that aura and
just
that vibe.
The energy
that vibe.
About them.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember this because I did not see the production, but I remember reading the review of it. Was it a very sort of pared down kind of I just remember the reviews pointing out the things that Davis is talking about the colorblind casting and all that.
Yes. It wasn't pared down because it had a beautiful. I mean, the set was minimal, but
that's what I meant.
The set
I shouldn't
was
have
minimal,
said
and
down, but because I remember them talking about the opening
it looked
scene.
Looked beautiful, and
so, yes.
I staged the overture behind a scrim, which
was
really
what
nice.
I'm talking
the
about,
action started at sunrise, and so they. By the time Curly sang "Oh, a Beautiful Morning" at 10 o'clock in the morning, they had done their chores, and you saw
right,
all of
okay.
that.
Yeah, really I didn't mean but by pared down. Pared down was a bad choice of words. I was thinking just more. It was just
so you got to see style. Ann Eller and Laurie and Judd,
right,
do their stuff and have the interaction with each other behind this as the sun was coming up. It was really pretty.
Very smart idea.
Pretty. Thanks.
Very smart.
Thanks.
Idea. Yeah.
No,
so but I'm much with all of you. I like to keep it different and things that I've. Well, you take something like The Sound of Music, for example, which I've directed a couple of times. You kind of have to do it pretty much true to the original.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of bound.
Casting wise, especially.
Yeah.
You're on the edge of the. It's tough because you want to balance audiences' expectations with not. But you know, not bringing the same thing to the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of Mac and Mabel, this is an example of that. There will be people in the audience that will be fans of this, like regardless of age group, like me, not just the musical, but of that time period of those performers. When you portray even for something brief like this, a one-nighter that's just a benefit. How extensive is your research primarily, because you're so limited by time, on the role, or is it on the person? Like, did
I
you?
I think on the person. Me and I've been reading all about him and his autobiography and learning what the period was like and who. I didn't know a lot of the stuff, and it's so fascinating. He lived right here, and the studio was right here in Edendale, right here, and so all the stuff he talks about, it's right in my neighborhood. And like he's talking about, he lived across the street from the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, and he saw Charlie Chaplin on the sidewalk one day after they, you know, were older. Yeah. And they talked about their careers, and it's just fascinating to me. And he wrote this biography like probably 55 years ago. So
wow,
it's really fascinating. And he was a funny man, but quirky and funny. But he wanted to make movies. It started at the first part of the it started at the beginning of movies. They didn't even call them movies at that point. So he started very beginning, and he made this. And theaters all across the country were coming along so fast, and they kept wanting movies like weekly, like so the two reelers they called them. They made them like, you know, six a week or
just something. At that point in time before, like, because obviously Max Sennett precedes Chaplin, he precedes Keaton,
and D.W. Griffith were contemporaries,
right? And but the one of the reasons that Sennett was able to do so much is that Sennett basically made the camera the audience, and like it was almost like a carryover from the music hall that the bits would happen and they would be self-contained. It wasn't until Griffith got so intricate with his camera
and
placement and his grand tales, and as we know from Birth of a Nation, sometimes some pretty horrible points of view. Birth of a Nation, of course, one of the few pro Ku Klux Klan movies. D.W. Griffith's a visual classic, but very, very troubling subject matter. But he was not able. That's one of the reasons Sennett was able to just generate.
One of his big things was his comedy was stubbing a nose at authority. He was like he started the Keystone Cops and hitting people with, you know, a lot of
slapstick.
And at authority. So it was like little people hitting cops or little people getting away from cops. And then, of course, the bathing beauties, all that stuff. And,
that's unbelievable.
Only because he found that people wanted to see that. So he put the bathing beauties in the cop movie so that the guys would go see the bathing
beauties.
You get
beauties. Both.
So it was all about money.
It's about creating a product.
Yeah,
about creating
kind of
a product.
Smart.
Yeah.
I want to, before we do our arts calendar, Michael, I would like to play something that we have.
Please.
Of
and you know
Davis
what?
Here.
We have the time to play it through.
Okay,
oh, wow.
Davis. Yeah.
And I really would appreciate that.
Let's
this
do
is
that.
A magnificent performance of a beautiful
thanks.
Song.
We will do that. We will
if
play.
If ever I would leave you from Camelot.
If ever ever I would leave you.
It was a live event.
It was
recording.
A stage benefit.
I was going to ask you.
And Ron Abel's arrangements, beautiful.
Yeah, well, Ron, you can do no wrong.
Right?
By the way, very briefly, I don't know if you know this, but our sponsor, Breakdown Services, is owned by a gentleman named Gary Marsh. As you
of
know,
course.
You've met Gary a number of times. In the film of Camelot. The final scene with Richard Harris and the little boy.
Mm-hmm.
The little boy is Gary Marsh.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. He
really?
Was an act. He was a child actor.
That's right. I remember him.
Yeah.
I think he told us that
story. Did he?
I think so.
In
a meeting.
But speaking of Camelot, the name of the song again, Michael?
Is If Ever I Would Leave You.
If Ever I Would Leave You.
Davis Gaines. And this is the voice you'll hear in Mac and Mabel.
Mm-hmm. And here we go.
May come, years may go, this I know will e'er be so. The reason to live is only to love a goddess on earth and a god above. If ever I would leave you, it wouldn't be in summer, seeing you in summer, I never would go. Flame, your face with a luster that puts gold to shame. But if I'd ever leave you, how could it be in autumn? Knowing you in autumn, I never would go. I've seen how you sparkle when fall nips the air. I know you in autumn, and I must be there. Oh, could I leave you running merrily through the snow, or on a wintry evening when you catch the fire's glow? If ever I would leave you, how could it be in springtime? Knowing how in spring I'm bewitched by you so. Oh, no, not in springtime, summer, winter, or fall. No, never would I leave you.
Boy can sing.
Wow.
Man, oh man, a
shout. I know.
Wow.
I was just.
Davis, that was spectacular.
Thank you very
Nothing
much.
Nothing short of.
Thank
I got to tell you,
well,
Michael.
Ron Abel's arranged me. You can't beat that, man. It's
I
awesome.
Got to tell you, Michael, you said that. Mm. You know how that I'm not. I mean, I love musical theater, but I'm certainly not as versed in it as you are. And you were like, play the whole thing. And I'm like, well, you know, it's
Why?
A lot. We're going to play the whole thing. And like 30 seconds into it, I was like, we have to hear this whole thing.
Yeah. When something's that good, yeah,
oh,
you
yeah.
absolutely
Thank
got
you
to.
So much.
And it's also like, you know, one of the things that, you know, hearing a performance like that is one thing, but then to hear a performance like this and know that, you know, it's live, mm-hmm. and there's no is one take. You can't
That's
tweak
scary.
It. Let's take this, you know, this take and marry it to this take and sweeten it and whatever. That's just how it was sang.
That's 100%
beautiful.
Sweet.
Oh,
thank
wow,
you so
Barry,
much.
That was really, really
thank
wonderful.
You. Yeah. Thank you.
Davis, do you have a website that we could tell
I
people
do.
About?
I do. Davis, www.davisgaines.com. And recently. I swear I would never do this, but uh-huh. I set up a Facebook page.
You
I
did?
I can't believe it.
No, no, we call that Libro di Faccia.
I think you can find it by Davis Gaines Actor on Facebook.
Okay.
All one word.
Now, is it a fan page?
It's a business page, yeah. I guess. Yeah. Yeah. But all my stuff's on there.
And just so people know, Davis,
for
the few that don't, it's Davis Gaines, and it's G-A-I-N-E-S, in case you're... I always overspell it for the sake of the interweb.
Correct.
Worldwide net, as the kids say. The interweb. Anyway, we'll be back. We're going to certainly come back to talking to Davis shortly. But in the interim, Michael, tell us about what you did this week in terms of attending theater. You saw a parade in Fullerton?
I did, and happily so. On opening night at the historic Plummer Auditorium, so it seemed rather appropriate to see this particular piece there.
The historic Plummer Auditorium?
Yes.
Yeah. Are there historic plumbers? Like the first wrench they used? How does that...
Not quite
Sorry.
The same.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that you was bad, Paul. That was bad.
Okay.
I'd like to apologize to the entire listening audience for that one.
Oh,
that was just,
my
goodness. I just smelled up the room with that one. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's just, one of the, I'm going to keep this brief, but Jason Robert Brown, who wrote this piece, and he did it early on in his career, it kind of established him, actually, and I think Daisy Prince was quite instrumental in getting it to her father and having him produce it on Broadway, and it... Not unlike the unfortunate run with Mac and Mabel, which we know is a fabulous show, but as Parade is, it too had a short life on Broadway.
Yeah, all about timing, all about, like you said, what the flavor of the month is.
This is based on a true story, as we know, and about Leo Frank, who was a Jew that was working as an accountant in Atlanta, and it's considered perhaps one of the most horrifying Semitic crimes that ever, you know, happened during that time period.
Right.
But I must say that 3D Theatricals, which is helmed by T.J. Dawson and his two siblings, therefore the 3Ds, and they all hold a substantial position there. Their take on theater, especially after seeing this for me, is just about the best it can possibly be. I mean, it's right up there with Musical Theater West, that's for sure, and probably... the two entities there in 3D and Musical Theater West are probably the most superior, I think, probably in our area, that are pulling this kind of production onto their stages and casting them so appropriately. This was so perfectly cast, not just with the leads of the show, but with every member of the ensemble. And you can scan every member of that ensemble. They are working so hard. They are so gifted musically, vocally, and in every sort of way, and ensconced in these gorgeous sets and the lighting and the musical direction by David Lamoureux, which I must say David is a force to be reckoned with in his own right. In fact, the whole family is. Mm-hmm. The mother, Julie, is an amazing pianist who had to sit in that night and play the show. And I don't know if that... I don't think she had much notice, actually, to do
it. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And... the son, Jordan, was played young Frank in the show.
Oh, man, it is all in the family.
He is a star in the making. This boy is so sensational.
How old is he?
Show. I would say he's certainly in his 20s, his early 20s, probably very early 20s. And Kristen, who is the sister, was not in the show, but she's equally as talented. She was in the chorus line, actually, down at Musical Theater West.
Oh, just right, okay.
Beautiful singer, beautiful dancer. They're kind of like the Lamoureux von Trapp family or something. they're just
The Osmond family.
Or the Osmonds, just amazingly talented.
Except likable.
Oh, God.
Sorry. Who's more likable than the other?
Then you have some of our regional stars like Zachary Ford is in it, and Gordon Goodman with this most amazing voice. Caitlin Humphreys, who played Lucille Frank, the wife of Leo Frank. What a beautiful job she did. She's a young woman. She's still in school down there at Cal State Fullerton. But this is something that people need. And Jeff Scroron, I can't leave him out, playing the lead of...
Is he really?
...of Leo Frank. And
I didn't know that. He was in Silence with me.
Yes, yes.
I love him.
An amazing job. He really has it nailed down.
Wow, good for him.
Yeah, so...
You know, Michael, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I want to tell the listeners, when we always talk about these productions and things that we see before we actually talk about them on the air, and when I talk about you, there's things you're enthusiastic about and there's things you are not. And when... you told me about this, and the first, all the comparisons that came to mind, as far as being as good at, you were using all Broadway references. You were saying just as good as anything that you've seen on Broadway in the past 10 years, and to know that that is, you know,
of that quality.
Of that quality, and I know that, you know, Fullerton is a, might be considered a little bit of a trek, but it's really not when you consider it, about 45 minutes, depending on traffic.
Well, when the payoff is this great.
Yeah. And but you also said that the area is such that if you get there early, beat the traffic, and there's a beautiful little street with restaurants and shops and all that.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely,
that's
lovely.
That's so huge in going out.
And to go and see this, ladies and gentlemen, which it does run through the 26th of May, and that's a simple pick up the phone and call them at 714-589-2770, extension 1. That is their box office number for tickets. And again, this is Plummer Auditorium in Fullerton. It plays Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. There are multiple performances involved. And like Musical Theater West, you know, you can get tickets for as little as $25, students, and, you know, front orchestra seats for $60.
You know, I mean, that's just unbelievable. Yep. And, you know, much like Mac and Mabel, I was supposed to do the show.
I was supposed to do
Parade, but I had a conflict, so I wasn't able.
What was that?
I don't sing or dance.
Okay. There you go.
While we're throwing the information out there, Mac and Mabel is the other show that we're talking about today, and that is only one night. That's Monday, May 20th at 8 p.m., and that is benefiting Musical Theater West Education and Outreach Programs. Tickets, musical.org. It's musical.org, or by phone, 562-856-1999, extension 4. And while we're talking about websites, remember Davis's. That's Davis Gaines, GAINES.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's it.
And he's also, as we said, he's on Libro di Faccia. Libro di Faccia on the Facebook. And just go there and type in Davis Gaines actor, and you'll be brought right to his page. But we still have time with Davis. It's certainly not over.
We're going to get into some things with
him.
We have time. We always ask people at the end of the show, but we have more time for this. But since we do have a little time, for those listeners that weren't listening the last time you talked about this, would you please tell them about meeting our ex-president,
really?
Mr. Bush?
For sure.
Really? Do you mind?
We'd like that story.
You don't have to retell it.
Okay, I'll tell it. I was at a dinner party the other night, a really nice dinner party with it was Linda Pearl and Michelle Lee and Amanda McBroom and Tracy
Lord?
Judy Garland. Tracy
Gold?
The one that just played downtown.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
They were all sitting at the table, and you know, we're having a great time. Everybody's talking, and they didn't want to hear. Linda taps her glass. I hate to put him on the spot.
Could you just did.
Yes, exactly. Could you tell the George W. Bush? Are you kidding me? Really? Everybody's having such a good time. anyway, so I had met his dad, H.W., we'll call him H.W., at an event for the M.D. Anderson Cancer Center, and I was the entertainment, and he was the speaker. And afterwards, he came up to me and said, you know, Barbara would really like you, and her birthday's coming up, and I'm going to talk to my boys and see if we can put something together, and what's your email, and I'll email you. So he followed, like 2 weeks later, I got an email from him, lovely email, would I come to Kennebunkport and sing for Barbara's 75th surprise birthday party. So I went there, and it was a fantastic event, and sang, you know, like 45 minutes, did the show, and then he invited all the out-of-town guests to come up to the house on the next morning for breakfast, for coffee and donuts, is what it was. So, of course, I went. So I go in, and I'm talking to him and other people that were there, and he says, there's coffee in the kitchen. Go help yourself. It's like, there's nobody. There's no service or secret service. It's just like being in someone's house. So I was kind of wandering around, looking around, and George W. walks in to the dining room where I was, and I said, good morning, Governor. How are you feeling? He said, I'm feeling fine. I ran for a couple hours after church. Feeling good. I said, that's great. And we talked for a while. One of his other brothers walked up, and we were talking. And he goes, can I ask you a question? And I said, yeah, of course. Can you learn how to sing, or is it something you're born with? And I said, well, I think one can learn to sing if you have some kind of musicality in your head. I mean, I think one can learn to sing. Long pause. Well, I don't know shit about singing. but you probably got the best voice in America. And I said, is that a compliment? And he goes, no, it's a compliment. It's powerful. It's powerful. I said, well, thank you. And so I looked around, and all the out-of-town guests were now gone. And it was just me and George W. Bush in the dining room talking, and I could see Barbara and Laura getting ready for lunch. I said, oh, my gosh, I better get going. He goes, no, stay for lunch. And I said, I really can't. I really should probably. I've overstayed my welcome, really. It's just embarrassing. No. If you're going to pick a day to eat here, this is the day, because we're having tacos. So I said, I would be honored to have lunch with you guys. I'd love to stay here, but you probably should go ask your mom. And he goes, you're right. Wait right here. So he goes in the kitchen, comes back out with two thumbs up. You're in. That was it. So I was his little buddy all day long. It was fantastic.
Davis, and I got to tell you, Davis, I'm so sorry to make you jump through hoops again. But I got to tell you, it's just, who has that story? Who has the story about George W. Bush? You know, the two, I mean, and if you guys, the two thumbs up, that's the thing that kills me. You're in. Yeah. Like, you know,
Mama sleep over.
I checked with mom.
Mama's the boss of that family.
Oh,
I'm
hysterical.
Telling you.
When we have stories like that and to see him tell that story, I wish that we were being televised.
I know. It's the only time I wish there was a camera in here.
So damn funny.
Oh, thank you.
We're in our final five.
Well, you know what we always do in this final five, Paul? And yes. Maybe we can shift it a little bit and talk about some of the odd, you know, ladies and gentlemen, what you know from listening to this program, we always ask our guests to come up with embarrassing moments from their careers. And
that was one.
That was
when things go south. When things go south, on the boards do not fly right. Mm-hmm. When you're half a bubble off plumb.
That's it. As they say.
Yes.
Is there something?
I told one last time I was here. Now I can't remember what that was, but.
Were you the one who told the one to beat, as far as I'm concerned, is the person, and it wasn't Davis who told it, but it was someone with a big inflatable costume that a rat got inside while they were on stage. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do remember it.
I don't remember who told it, but I think that really sets the bar in terms of the worst thing to happen on stage is when you have a big inflatable costume and inside it is a rat.
That was a male. It was a male. I remember that.
I think I told the other story. I think
what did you tell?
The Phantom, when I was Ral on Broadway in Phantom, and I got food poisoning. I think that's a pretty infamous story. With Rebecca Luker was playing Christine, and I was Ral, and we got on the rooftop to sing All I Ask of You. And I had to leave the roof, I had to go off, and I never came back. So she continued to sing the whole duet by herself.
And where
to this day she doesn't let me forget that.
When did that happen? When does that fall in the show?
I don't remember. I blocked it out. I don't remember.
2,000 times. 2,000 times he doesn't remember. I don't want to go back there. Oh,
it's either in the first act or the second act. I don't know.
I'm just curious because if you it was either the first act or the second act.
I don't know.
But what I don't understand is if you don't come back, what happens? Did they just end the show?
No, I came back later, but I couldn't get back for that song. So I think I did my business and came back.
Oh, okay.
Hey, you know what I think we should do? I think this would be a fun and fair thing to do, especially for our listeners who were anticipating that David was going to be here. We do have a track of David
singing
a beautiful song that ironically is from Oklahoma.
We'll have him sing.
Hopefully he'll show up on Monday is what I'm hoping.
I am hoping too. Otherwise, you know who's going to be there. One Paul Strohle.
It could be Frank Capra. Frank Capra right here.
Yeah. Yes. By the way, speaking of that, before we get to that, there's a great box set of Dick Cavett called The Hollywood Greats. Mm-hmm. And in it, he interviews four directors, and he interviews... Mel Brooks, Peter Bogdanovich, Robert Altman, and Frank Capra, all on on one panel. Wow. And it's really interesting to start because they're all talking, and then the whole second half of it is all three of the directors just look at Frank Capra and just listen like they're in school. It's an astounding piece of film.
Nice.
So if you see that. But anyway, this track is David Bernard. And you know what? We'll play it, and we'll let David play us off the air because we're at the end of the show, and we'll get to listen to more of it. This is David Burnham. It's from Oklahoma. It's If I Loved You. And once again, is that correct?
It's from his album.
It's not from Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no,
it's from Carousel.
I'm sorry.
I thought you said Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Okay, wasn't me.
Same composer.
It's from Carousel. It's David Burnham.
Sorry,
and it's called If I Loved You.
AVS Media Demo. AVS Media Demo.
Time and again, I would try to say all I'd want you
AVS Media Demo
to know.
Okay. I have no idea.
You know,
I have no
it
idea.
It just keeps getting stranger here.
But what is that? What is that that's playing? Is that like a German courtesan or something?
Who I
is
don't
that woman
know. I don't
French. It would be French. I guess.
What? I don't. You think
David
it's a part of the song?
Das Denner?
Of his version?
No, maybe it goes into some.
No, that is no no that is
remix,
some
a remix.
That is not, that is a technical glitch. That couldn't possibly be
well,
part of the track.
The taxi driver something. Going by.
Or maybe it is. Maybe it is. I don't know. Yes, could be. Anyway, let's
We assure you he's a fabulous singer and,
as you can tell by his voice, but boy, that was a little
yes,
that
indeed.
Threw me for
and,
a loop.
And you know, quite frankly, David is very good about, you know, he's been on the show before, so I can't imagine what happened here today. But David, we hope that you're okay and we'll look forward to seeing you on Monday night in Mac and Mabel, that's for sure.
Otherwise, well, Paul will be there.
Yeah, otherwise,
be
Paul Strolley will be doing your role yes. and in your pants, yeah. if you'll don't pardon that expression.
Okay, and with that, we'll see you all next week. Davis, always a pleasure to have
Thank
you
on
the show.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Davis,
love to be here.
Michael, we love having
let's
you.
Let's go have
great
lunch.
To see
all
you,
right.
and we'll see you all next week.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.